What's it like to coach baseball in a rural school district? Four coaches who battled against each other look back on great games, funny stories, and memories of Hall of Fame umpire Joe McWilliams. I can't believe I waited 87 episodes to relive these memories. Travis Church, Randy Leach, and Buck Workman, next on the Athlete One podcast.
Welcome to the Athlete One podcast. Veteran high school baseball coach Ken Carpenter takes you into life's classroom as experienced through sports. Go behind the scenes with athletes and coaches as they share great stories, life lessons, and ways to impact others.
Today's episode of the Athlete One podcast is powered by the Netting Professionals, improving programs one facility at a time. The Netting Professionals specialize in the design, fabrication, and installation of custom netting for baseball and softball. This includes backstops, batting cages, BP turtles, screens, ball carts, and more. They also design and install digital graphic wall padding, windscreen, turf protectors, dugout benches, and cubbies. The netting pros are not limited to just baseball and softball. They also work with football, soccer, lacrosse, and golf courses. You need to contact them today at 844-620-2707. That's 844-620-2707. Or visit them online at www.nettingpros.com. Or check out Netting Pros on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn for all their latest products and projects. Hi, my name is Ken Carpenter, and welcome to Athlete One, a podcast for athletes, coaches, and parents. My mission is to bring this group together and learn from those who were successful and failed as a player or coach. Thanks for joining me as we learn from some of the best athletes and coaches around the country. Now to my interview with Travis Church, Randy Leach, and Buck Workman. Hello and welcome to the Athlete One podcast. I'm your host, Ken Carpenter, and joining me today are three coaches I had the opportunity and the challenge of coaching against. Going from top to bottom, Buck Workman from Northmore High School, Randy Leach, who was at River Valley at the time and now is at Ridgedale, and Travis Church, who's been at Highland High School here in Ohio. Guys, hey, thanks for taking time to jump on the podcast.
Thanks for inviting
us. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Well, guys, when we first tried this last week, it didn't go off too well. But, you know, when I first texted you about joining me on the podcast, Travis asked what were the topics we'd be discussing. And before I could even answer, the comments started coming in, and it hit me instantly. One of the things I really missed is the banter, the conversation between coaches, the stories about the umpires. And what memory comes to mind for you guys when you look back on your high school baseball coaching career? And let's start with you first, Randy.
I agree with you. Like, one of the things I think was really great is we were all very competitive, you know, as coaches, you know, but we also had a respect for each other. And, you know, it was always good to, you know, when you went to Highland or Buckeye Valley or Northmore or wherever, that you knew the coach and, you know, you could talk, you know, and like usually, you know, there was a few jokes, stuff like that, you know, and, but, you know, once the game started, it was, you know, 100%. You know, serious, but you also knew that when it was the game was over with, that, you know, we would talk, you know, whatever. And I really appreciated that, all the friendships that I made, you know, I thought we had something special in the MOAC, you know, great group of coaches for them, you know, and guys that really loved the game and had respect for each other. And I thought that was really something special.
Travis.
Yeah, just kind of piggyback and echo off of what Randy said. I think that, you know, first and foremost, you know, I think, you know, the relationships that you make with your players is something that can be missed when you're not coaching anymore. And then from a coaching standpoint, just the fraternity, it really is a coaching fraternity. The relationships that you build that end up being lifelong. I mean, you know, Buck's family and mine, you know, have been on family vacations together because of, you know, us first meeting on the baseball field. You know, we knew that every season at Highland, we knew that for the most part, the league championship was going to go through Buckeye Valley, River Valley, or us. And we knew that, you know, that red division, that we were going to have to really play well on those games. But like Randy said, after those games, we had a great respect for each other as coaches and as friends, and still get to hear about games today from Buck, how, you know, games of Northmore against Highland too. So a lot of great memories.
And Buck, what do you think?
Just that, the relationships that you build with these guys, I mean, the kids and the coaches, it goes a long way, and it makes it enjoyable. And it's what's kept me around this long, because the kids make me feel young, and the relationships that we go to the clinics and things like that with the other coaches. And it's just a good time. I mean, my first year at Northmore, I got to know Travis because I coached his younger brother, that he was a senior that year. I had him, and, you know, I had that team, and I'm like, going into this first year MOAC, I'm like, we're going to be pretty good. But then, like he said, I had to play Buckeye Valley and River Valley and Highland. It was like going into a gunfight with a butter knife. It's like, geez, these guys are pretty good over on this big side. But that whole, just the relationships that were built up over time is why I've stuck around this long. It's been awesome.
Well, you know, the thing that sticks out with me is what, you know, is one, I knew every time it was going to be, there was never an easy game, it seemed like. And, you know, with you in particular, Randy, to this day, I have not figured out one of your signs. And I was always good at figuring out at least something, never could figure it out. And I would just throw things in the dugout, and I'd be like, what? I know it's a bunt sign. I know the bunt's coming. I couldn't see what it was. So, oh, one of the most frustrating things in the world for me. Would you like to share what it is now that
if I was still retired, I would, but yeah, no, I can't divulge that.
Yeah. Well, what made you guys get into coaching? And when obviously you probably had a good high school and, you know, possible college experience. What made you, Travis, jump into the wanting to be a coach? And you do both baseball and football.
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt, it was Jim Stoyle for me. He was my football and baseball coach when I was in high school. And all of you guys know Coach Stoyle. And he just was really a father role to me. And it really was that moment in which I figured out that I wanted to be able to make an impact on kids' lives the way he did mine. And so, you know, and then it's really neat how, you know, God works. And, I was able to get the opportunity to follow, you know, him here at Highland, and it was strictly because of him. You know, I had this opportunity at Highland because of Coach Stoyle, and you know, that relationship continues to this day. And so, but really it, and I think that probably for a lot of guys too, right? It's a teacher, an educator, or a coach that drove you kind of to this path. But yeah, for me, it was Coach Stoyle.
What about you, Buck?
I was kind of fortunate in that same respect. I mean, I was sitting at home, I was going to the branch, I went to Shelby, and Rob Howerton, I don't remember if any of you remember that name, but he was a heck of an athlete at Shelby. He was the head coach, and he calls me up out of the blue. He's like, hey, you're going to wrestling coach at freshman or JV. This was back in 90 and I graduated in 89. And I'm like, my brother, youngest brothers, they were still coming through. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds interesting. And I went and did it, enjoyed it. But then I kind of went off and did my own thing. I ended up going to Toledo and played softball for years. We were big into softball. Me and my brothers, we played like really competitive softball, but I'm sitting at home one night with my wife and Galleon, and Dan Gorbett calls me up. He's like, hey, this is how coaches do it too. Dan Gorbett calls me up on the phone. He said, hey, I see your name's on the sub list. Didn't you play baseball at Shelby? You interested in coaching my JV team? I'm like, sure. Next thing I know, 2 years under Dan, and then Dan's wife from Northmore, she's a guidance counselor. She calls out there and says, hey, we got a social studies opening, and I've been at Northmore for 24 years. So it's just weird how that worked out for me. But, you know, I didn't even know what Northmore was. but it ended up being a great thing for me.
And what about you, Randy? What got you into coaching?
I probably the teachers that I looked up to the most were the guys that also coached and, you know, coached me. And, you know, I got to know them, you know, pretty well. And they told me that, you know, hey, you'll never be rich, but they're like, it's a pretty good life. And they always told me, you know, how much they enjoyed it, you know? And so, and I still talk to them to this day. I mean, my entire career, I still stayed, you know, to my former coaches still stayed, you know, close to them, you know, even asking advice and stuff. And it was funny because when I interviewed for the job at River Valley for a teaching job, you know, we were always told in college, hey, if you want to coach, let the superintendent know, because they're always looking for coaches. And I said that in my interview, and superintendent looked at me and was like, here, we hire teachers. We don't hire coaches. And I was like, okay, I just sabotaged myself. I ended up getting the job. And the guy that was at River Valley was the head coach. He found out that I, you know, had interest in coaching baseball. So he got a hold of me first week there. And so I was the JV coach for 3 years. And then he ended up leaving and took the head coaching job at Indiana Wesleyan. And, you know, I applied and got it. And I'm still teaching at River Valley 35 years now. So
that's impressive. Now, let me ask you this. I've had 85 episodes, and, you know, it ranges from high school coaches and athletes to all the way up to the pro ranks. And, you know, I've had some big time suburban school coaches on, but I wanted to have you guys on. I wanted to talk about this specifically. Talk about what it's like to coach at a rural school where, you know, you don't get all the big time amenities like you see at some of these big high schools that are around the country. But, you know, your parks are really nice places despite that. But talk about your experience just coaching kids that when they started in kindergarten, they came all the way up through the system. And let's go with you first on that one, Buck.
I mean, that's kind of a two-parter for me. First of all, when I first got there, I mean, you could talk about that whole travel ball scene and then the kids that come up through your county ball program. Well, for the first, I don't want to say 10 years that I was there from 01 to 11, I probably had just a handful of those travel ball kids. But then I got involved because my own sons were coming through. So I got into the county thing and we did it. We had input and would try to help out as much as we could as a program with the county ball program early on. But until you get your own kids in there and really get more invested, I mean, you have to put the time in to start that feeder program because, I mean, I've seen it in the Highland and River Valley and Buckeye Valley. I mean, we've seen those kids come up through the ranks. They're studs, and I feel like, you know, we're a little bit smaller, more, you know, probably even a little bit more rural than River Valley, I would say, but in Buckeye Valley for that matter. But those kids, once they buy in and they understand, hey, it's about competing, and it just becomes about that, I think we kind of turned the corner in terms of all that. I mean, Northmore's had some good teams for the years. Even before I got there, Travis was on a Final Four team. I mean, he knows what it's about, but it's tough. I mean, everybody's trying to accomplish the same goal, but just bringing those kids up is, you know, it was fun. It was fun.
Travis.
Yeah. You know, for me on this one, and different than Buck, because, I mean, kudos to him. I mean, what he's been able to build as far as a program is wonderful. And it's great to see as my alma mater. But for me, I was very fortunate because Coach Stoyle really kind of he had things rolling before I got here. And I just had to come in and make sure I didn't screw it up. And really, that's the philosophy that I took. The respect that I had for him and knowing that we had, you know, blue collar kids here at Highland and continue to that just really want to get to work. And, you know, we've built and been able to sustain a program now. And Donnie's doing a great job as well here at Highland that, you know, we're 20 plus going on 20 plus seasons of no losing records. And, you know, I think that just goes to say for our community that how important baseball is. And like I said, I think that started probably in 99 when Coach got here and the vision that he saw, you know, they built the quad park across the road and then, you know, with the new high school state or field. And so when you make something important and everyone kind of buys into it, and that's what we definitely have here at Highland is, the importance of what baseball is and the commitment to continue tradition and you know, something that we remind our kids on a regular basis is, you know, with tradition comes responsibility. And so, you know, I don't think I really had to build a whole lot here at Highland. I just had to sustain and know that there's expectations that were set before me. And our kids are hardworking kids and, you know, nothing was really given to them. They just knew that they had something to uphold and they didn't want to let down the past classes that had graduated.
Well, you're definitely, when you took over for Coach Stoyle, there was definitely no drop off. That's for sure. Yeah. You kept the train rolling. And Randy, what about you?
I was real fortunate. Like at River Valley, they always had, you know, a pretty well organized baseball for youth program. And, you know, at the old high school, we had several fields on the grounds there. And then when we had to move high schools, they built an entire complex. And, you know, it's nice when you've got that going for you because they've got a level of commitment, you know, to, you know, having the young kids learn the game of baseball, you know, and I was also very fortunate that I had kids, you know, kind of like what Travis was saying, kind of the blue collar, you know, work ethic. And, you know, no matter what I demanded out of them, you know, they, you know, wanted even more and they worked hard and it was, you know, and it's kind of neat that, you know, kid that you started playing T-ball with, now you're a senior in high school and you guys are on the same, you know, baseball team and your goals are winning the league, you know, winning the district, things like that. And now that I'm at Ridgedale, we're trying to build that. You know, their baseball for youth kind of, you know, like we're trying to build up the youth program. We had a big youth camp this summer, try to get some excitement. We had a lot of kids, you know, which was good. You know, Buck was talking about travel ball. This past year, we didn't have any kids that had played travel ball. And you really can tell, you know, a big difference. There's kids that play travel ball, you know, they've got, you know, a different level of polish, you know, with it. So we're trying to get, you know, some kids into travel baseball so they get some more experience in the summertime. But yeah, it's, you know, you got to lay down the foundation in order to, you know, reap any benefits down the road with it. So, you know, it's kind of weird because it's, you know, it's almost like starting all over again, you know, with it.
Definitely. Well, the best I can count is I've probably coached 75 or more games against you, the three of you guys. And something that stood out to me was when I was a volunteer assistant just a few years back at Dublin Jerome, we hosted a district tournament game, and Randy, your son was playing for the team that was playing in it. And, you know, I watched the game. I actually helped announce the game. But the thing that stood out to me was, you know, I kept looking down at you, and, you know, I'm saying, all right, he's got his son on the mound. It's a district game. And you were the ideal parent. You supported everybody on the team. You didn't go after the umpires, you know, exactly how a parent should be. And I know Buck and Travis, you guys, you've had kids come up and play, and you've had to watch them play. And what's it seems like it's on every Twitter page you look across this lately, parents that are out of control in the stands or at the basketball game or the wrestling match. And, you know, is there any way to get this under control, or is that just how it is? And that, Travis, I'll start off with you.
Well, I think, you know, when I think of, you know, what you were saying about Randy, and I know that I've gotten to watch Buck watch his boys play, and I'm sure you were the same way watching Jake, and for myself, you're really wanting your kids just to be kind people, right? And so if you can't model that as a parent, how can you have those expectations for your child? And so I think as a parent, you know, and as a coach, you know, we obviously, all of us got heated, right? And I think that as a parent, I've really gotten to enjoy watching my kids compete and really soak it in and understand that it's really for a very short season when we think about life in general. And if we put things in perspective like that, I think that you're able to enjoy, you know, the game, you're able to enjoy just life more. And I don't know, that's something that it scares me a little bit as to, you know, where our society is. And, you know, I guess I hope that we continue educators like ourselves, getting to be involved in kids' lives on a daily basis. Hopefully we have enough of us that are making the difference to hopefully get this things turned around.
Now, Randy, I use you as the example there. You're now in a situation where you decided to be the assistant coach for your son, who's now the coach at Ridgedale. And you've had a lot of experience with parents over the year. What are your thoughts?
My thing is, like, I wanted to be the parent, you know, like, if I want parents to be a certain way, I have to act that way when I'm watching my kids' game too, you know. And I've seen some bad things, you know, through the years, not just at baseball games, but at football, basketball, things like that. And, you know, and my thing was, I didn't want to be that parent. I didn't want to embarrass my own son, you know, because I've had players that have told me, you know, coach, my dad embarrasses me, or my mom embarrasses me, you know, by their behavior. And so that always stuck with me. I didn't want to be, you know, that type of parent. And, you know, and I want my son to be respectful on the field to the umpires, to, you know, teammates, to the opposing team. And, you know, and as his dad, I've got to, you know, be that way as well, you know? And so that, for me, it was, you know, I swear I got more nervous whenever I'd be at his games and he was pitching than I ever did when I was coaching a game, you know? And because you always, you know, the pitcher, it's kind of like the quarterback in football, you know, if things go great, oh, the pitcher's wonderful. If something happens, you know, oh, why they pitch that bump, you know, that type of stuff. And so I was, I don't know, I was always nervous. And I got, I was fortunate I got to coach him in travel ball. And even in travel ball, when I pitched him, I was always so much more nervous than I was for anything else. So, but yeah, it was a great experience. And it's a great experience getting to coach with him now too.
Yeah. And Buck, how about you?
Okay, with your own kids, what I remember about that is ever since they were 4, 5, 6, you know, I'm coaching them on up through baseball and wrestling. And like you guys said, I was more nervous when they were out there, you know, performing when I wasn't coaching than when I was coaching, because it kind of takes it, cause it takes that part out of it, because you're so focused on trying to help them out. Some of the most enjoyable experiences I had was watching my son play for Travis when I was just sitting out there being a dad, and watching him have to worry about all the umpires' calls and the kids doing foolish stuff. So I had a really good time doing that.
Every coach could probably write a book about their experiences on and off the field, you know, whether it's at coaches' clinics or whatever it may be. What's a story that throughout your career you look back on it and you either tell it to another coach at a clinic, or it just brings a smile to your face? Or you-
so Joe and Merle used to be a duo, and we were over at Carrington one time, and it was an overcast day early in the season, 4:30 start. It's overcast, and we start playing. It's cold. Game's going along. I think Carrington was up 8-0 or so. They were putting it on us pretty good. And so I'm not in a real jovial mood as it is. And I walk by Joe at home plate, and Joe says, "Hey, coach, this is going to be the last inning regardless." It was the top of the fifth. And I looked up in the sky and looking around, I'm like, I was like, "Joe, it's no darker now than it was when we started. It's just one of them days." He said, "Well, another word and we'll end it right now." And I was like, "Oh, okay." So, you know, Joe, you can't really, you can say some things to Joe, but at the end of the day, when he draws a line in the sand, you better just stop. So I knew better. And I was like, "I'm just going to go out to third base and get this over with." So I'm walking, I'm halfway there. I'm like, "Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't turn around." And I couldn't help myself. I turn around and I ask him, "Well, what are you waiting on, Joe?" Sure enough, he takes all the balls out of his bag, drops them on home plate, motions to Merle. They're out of there. And Newbert was the coach back then, and Newbert was just beside himself. He's like, Joe, what are you doing? And we ended up finishing that game at a later date. That was the end of it.
Well, I got one for each one of you. So I think that might have been the only game that we lost to Northmore and my tenure, and I'm still not over it. For now, with that umpire that he's talking about, goes to the story with Randy. It was the same umpire that we had. It was a windy day at River Valley. The ball, his kid hits a ball to dead center. It bounces over. Well, at least that's what the initial call was by the same umpire that Buck was referring to. And then Randy proceeds to go out with that. Randy did get rid of his batting gloves during the game. So he goes out to talk to the umpire. Has the umpire actually goes out and asks my center fielder if the ball bounced over or went over. My center fielder says, "Oh, it was a home run." And he changed the call and gave the kid a home run. Now, I may have lost my mind a little bit on that situation and told the umpire that if we're going to ask kids to make calls, then we don't need them at the game. The other one for Ken was, it was freezing. And we always had a rule here at Northmore, at Highland. Like Coach Hoyne, he was a big stickler on 40 degrees. So, and it was, it may have been 40, but it felt like 25. And it was one of the new year, it was one of the first years at the new field at Buckeye Valley. And I called Ken and I said, I don't know if we're going to be able to play. Like Coach Hoyne isn't letting us come over. And he goes, we're playing. And I'm like, okay. So I was able to talk Coach Hoyne into letting us come over. We show up to Buckeye Valley. There's no one. There's no one out there. Ken's got his guys in the school somewhere taking batting practice in their infield and everything. It's freezing. My guys are wanting to keep their coats on and stuff. I'm like, no. We came over here to get your stuff off. We are going to get warmed up and we're going to be ready to go. So, but those were, you know, ones that kind of stick out in my mind right from the get-go as far as the three of you guys that it was always, like I said, always great to compete against, you know, your guys' programs. And we always knew that we had to play well to be on the winning side or give ourselves a chance to win.
Ken, I have a good memory of you. It was down at Buckeye Valley, and I forget what the call was, but it was a bad call by the umpire. We were you know, hitting, and you had been sitting on a bucket. You were up and down off a bucket, and you popped up off the bucket to yell at the umpire, and you went to set back down, and the bucket came out from under you, and all the balls started rolling out in the dugout. It was hard not to laugh on the third base, you know, because I was like, I knew how mad you were, you know, but it was like, you know, that kind of came out. So I remember that one, but probably one of my funniest memories, I about got thrown out and I had nothing to do with it. We were playing an inner city Columbus team, and their third baseman had made two errors in the inning, and their assistant coach yells out at the third baseman. I mean, and yelled something. And the third baseman didn't like it. So he yells cuss words back at the coach. Pretty soon the coach is cussing at him. The umpire thinks I'm cussing at the third baseman. And he's yelling at me. And he's like, you're going out. I was like, it's not me. So that's between these two. You know, and the guy, finally, the field umpire had to come in and is like, yeah, it wasn't the River Valley coach. He goes, it's the assistant coach and the third baseman. But, I mean, I was right in the middle of this F-bomb war between, you know, the third baseman and this assistant coach. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding. I thought they were going to fight, you know. And I was like, that was probably, like, I remember – after the game, the kids were like, we thought you were getting thrown out and we didn't even know what you did. And I said, I didn't do anything. You know, I just happened to be there. And I was like, but yeah, that, I'll never forget that. That was an interesting one.
One year we played them at our place, and it was, I mean, I promise you, he could tell you the specifics more than me. I know we had bases loaded and we were down one, like the bottom of the sixth. He brings in one of his better pitchers who had a nasty curveball. He's dropped off the table. And my kid that was hitting, he told me while they were warming up, he said, you know, I can't hit this kid's curveball. I said, well, we don't got any other choices. I'm looking at the bench. I was like, we don't have any other chances. I said, get up here and swing three times and do the best you can. Sure enough, curveball to dirt, swings over the top. Curveball to dirt, swings over the top. Travis yells out to his catcher after strike two. He's like, just step on home plate. Because he knew this next, knew it was going to be a curveball in the dirt. Sure enough, curveball in dirt, my kid swings over it. His kid blocks it, takes about a half a step towards home plate, and he rolls the ball out to the pitcher's mound. By this time, his pitcher was halfway into the dugout, and he never stepped on home plate.
So my runner on third scores. While that ball's rolling out past the pitcher's mound, my runner on second scores. It's just a merry-go-round. And Travis is coming on glued. He's more upset about his catcher not, doing the right thing. But then he ends up getting into it with the catcher and or the umpire. And I was like, oh, my, this. And we ended up holding on and beating him. So I know he's not – he still probably has sleepless nights when he thinks about that one.
Did you have ever any stories that you remember with Randy?
Once a stand on my mind with Randy was the first year when they had their new field. It wasn't really to do with Randy. It kind of had to do with another umpire. And the first year they played over there, it was really – the infield wasn't really smooth yet. I mean, it was real choppy. And River Valley had a kid hit a ball. The first bounce was foul territory. Clearly, it was way out there. But, it went plink, plink, plink and worked its way back into fair territory. But – our first baseman picks it up, steps on the bag. But on that first bounce, the umpire had yelled foul ball. So at that point in time, the runner stops, the hitter stops running, ends up being a fair ball. And I obviously am going to go out to talk to him. I just slowly am walking out there and he meets me halfway. He doesn't even let me get out there. And he just gets right in my ear and he says, I messed it up. All right. But it was explicative laced. He was upset at himself, And as a coach, what do I say to that? He admitted he made a mistake, and there's nothing we could change at that point. I'd rather have they do that than act like they're right all the time.
I scouted a game one time for the tournament, and I think we may have been the one or two seed, and of course, get one of the real low seeds. And I was always worried. I said, I got to go at least see a team. And I went first inning, throw to the first baseman, and if he was a wrestler, he would have been wrestling heavyweight. And he didn't even make an attempt to jump and get the ball, and it rolled the defense, and the coach yelled at him to go get the ball. And he turned and yelled at the shortstop and told him to go get the ball because he threw it. And I closed my book up. I said, I think I'm good. And I was like, I'm done. But, looking back on it, we all probably have a great story about Joe McWilliams. And Joe, he was a legend when it comes to umpiring. And, he did all the big time games, the state tournament games, regionals and everything. But I would imagine every one of us had a run in with him. What is your best Joe McWilliams story? And Travis, I'll start with you.
Yeah, probably the best one was at playing Buckeye Valley at your place. And it was another probably early April cold day. And Joe, for whatever reason, didn't have gloves on. And then he's behind the plate and he takes a foul ball off of his hand. And you could hear it crack from third base off this baseball off of his hand. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's broken. And he jumped out and, does one of these. And, we both, Ken and I, go up and check on him. And he said, you just got to give me a minute. And I asked him if he wanted gloves on, and his hand, it had doubled in size by the time I got into home plate to check on him. It was incredible, but he's still back in there, gave him about 5 minutes and he was back in there and getting after it again. But, just always the comments and, Joe was, he was a lot of fun to have out there too. There were times, obviously, that all of us had our run-ins with him, but he was a lot of fun to be out there on the field. I think of him and, Jim Newcomb was another one. And, these guys are just, just great guys. But could definitely get your blood boiling at times too.
I just remember how Joe would he reminded me of a professional wrestler in some ways, because he kind of liked it when the crowd got on him, because then he would play to the crowd. you know, or he would talk back to them, you know, or he would like, you know, kind of egg them on a little bit. And one night, this was at the old high school at River Valley. He had a game and it wasn't one of his better games and fans were all over him and everything. So I, you know, after the game, stayed down there, drug the field, got the field all ready, you know, did all that type of stuff. So I come up in the parking lot and there he's sitting in a lawn chair eating popcorn from the concessions. You know, this has got to be 45 minutes after the game. And I was like, what are you doing here? And he's like, well, I decided after the game, since the fans wanted to talk to me all the game, thought I'd be a man of the people and I would just pull out my chair out of my trunk. I'd sit here and if they had something to say to me, they could come up and do it. You know, and you know, that's just the type of guy he was, you know, and it was always funny because, you know, it didn't bother him, you know, if fans yelled at him, anything like that. And he's like, you know what? I've been yelled at by better people than that, you know, and he would always have that kind of attitude.
There's a couple stories with Joe that I remember, and I had a ton of just run-ins with him. I mean, he came through the handshake line one time, and I, you know, and I was frustrated with him, and I, you know, you're shaking everybody's hand, and then it was him, and I was like, Joe, what are you doing? You know, and he's like, he just shaking everybody's hand. But, you know, I remember he was doing a regional game down at Dublin Kaufman, and I went down just to watch, and I remember looking at Tim Saunders, who was the host for the field that day, and I said, Tim, don't we usually have a 3-man crew for the regional games? And he's like, yeah, there's a 3-man crew. I checked them in when they got here. I said, well, I'm looking out the field right now. It was like the fourth inning, and there are only two guys out there. And I looked around. I looked to my left, and standing in the line up by the portage on, there was Joe just standing in line waiting to go to the restroom. And we were laughing. I said, that's Joe right there for you. He does it his way. Randy, what about you? Was there a game that you look back on or a situation where you thought, man, I wish I could get that one back?
A lot of them. You know, I used to tell my kids, like, we would have a tough game and, you know, and be rough and you know, you know how it was. It always seemed like it was 100 times worse for the coach a lot of times than the players, you know. And for me, I would always be like, I got to go home and watch a war movie, you know. I got to go watch things get blown up, you know, whatever, just to try to get that out of my mind. You know, but, you know, it's like there, you know, there's always those games and, you know, in hindsight, you know, you're like, man, should have done this or should have pitched him, you know, or whatever. But, you know, yeah, I mean, you can't coach and not have those type of feelings, you know, but, you know, I realize that, you know, you can't do anything about it at this point, you know, with it, but yeah, you know, there's things that, you know, stick out, you know, with it. But, you know, it's bound to, you know, whatever's going to happen happens, you know, with it. So.
Well, I think for me, I always I really looked at one run games a lot. I always felt that I could have done something in a one run game if we got beat. So that reflection on one run games was what has always been a tough one for me. But I think probably I wish I would have enjoyed the wins more than what I did. And yeah, and I think that
that's a good one.
Maybe kind of a double-edged sword of having so much success early in my career. You know, my second year here at Highland, we were playing in the state semifinal, and from that point on, it was that feeling of what that felt like, and remembering what it felt like as a player and wanting every one of my players to have that opportunity. I just feel like every kid, now obviously not every kid does, but man, to have a kid's opportunity to make deep tournament runs with your high school teammates is just, there's no feeling like it. And so, but with that, I think that I really grinded myself way too much and didn't enjoy the wins. So I think that's probably, if I had a regret, that would probably be it, that I didn't enjoy the wins as much as I should have. But at the end of the day, I know that I gave the boys everything that I possibly had.
You know, I that probably sticks with me more than anything because, you know, probably the reason I'm not able to coach today is I have no large intestines, no colon, and I didn't enjoy the wins as much as I probably should have because I was always worried about the next game and the next season. And, you know, I was never satisfied, and that was probably – and it ate at me, and it's probably part of the reason – the way my health is to this day. But, you know, I wouldn't give it up for anything because it was my life. And that's part of the reason why I kind of started the podcast, you know. But if I were to pick something that, you know, it for someone who wasn't a part of it, probably thinks it's hilarious. But my last game as a head coach, we're playing against Gahanna and we're up on them in the bottom of the seventh by three runs, and we counted there were six or seven calls that didn't go our way, whether it was a throw to first, a strike three call, and to end the game with the bases loaded, full count, a pop-up, and our first baseman comes over to catch it in right on the edge of our dugout, and one of our guys was on the bench, and he – had his glove on, and he reached up and knocked the ball out of his hand. And I was stunned because that, I mean, we'll really have a chance to go now if we win that one. And next pitch, base hit, game over. And yeah. So, you know, you just think back on those days, and, you know, I'm glad I'm able to talk about it because I got a chance to live it, you know, win or lose, it was fun. But there are so many great experiences in baseball. And I want to try to do something today that I've never done on the podcast. I want to give each one of you guys a chance to ask me one question, and I'll do my best to be on the other end of it and answer it for you. And I'll start with Buck, you go first.
Now that I got to see you inducted into the Central District Hall of Fame, I thought that was really cool that your son was able to introduce you and talk about you. And that was awesome. I mean, I coached my kids. Travis has coached his kids. You know, Randy coached his kid. Did you feel like there was added pressure when you were coaching your own kid versus the other ones and the success that you wanted? Did you ever hear any rumblings that, oh, he's only playing because he's coach's kid or anything like that?
I guess, yes. And I've talked to several other coaches, and they talked about their stories with their kids, and two of them were all-state players. My son wasn't an all-state player, and they said that they took grief because their son played. And yes, with Jake, there were some parents that complained, or you know, they said some things, and you know, I did my best to do what I always try to coach it like. Mm-hmm. What is best for the team. And Jake knew that going in. And so he was a player that, you know, he had the second highest on base percentage and probably more and he, you know, he was a guy that, you know, was solid in defense. And he, in the 3 years he was with me, he never missed a workout, never did
missed anything. He was at everything. And, you know, so, you know, I felt like I had things that backed it up. And, so, you know, it was tough, though. Anybody that's coached their kid knows that, you know, it doesn't matter how you could have your kid could be Shohei Ohtani. And you're gonna hear somebody.
It's factual. Not happy. I mean, I went through. You know, I never really heard it directly to my face, but you hear it behind your back, and it's kind of disheartening because I don't think there's any coach out there that I know that would do that to put themselves in a situation where it's going to make their team worse by playing their own kid. I don't understand that. That philosophy just blows my mind. But I never really had to deal with anything made. I just heard little rumblings, and it's like, you know. That's too bad that people would even put that out there, knowing that if they knew me or knew you, or they know we would never do that.
Right. And, you know, it's funny you say that because you saw how good Ty Harriott was the 4 years that he played for me at Buckeye Valley. I had a parent that thought he shouldn't be playing, you know, and he hit 41 home runs in his career. Never hit under 400.
I mean, you know, I'm guessing that that parent's kid played the same position as him. That's all I can figure.
Yeah, you know, and I just shook my head. I was like, you know, there's nothing you can do that. I mean, as good as he was, there were still people unhappy.
I've been at Northmore 24 years now, and he's arguably the best hitter I've still ever seen. I mean, he's right up here in the tops. The kid was amazing.
Maybe just to piggyback off a question that you had talked or you'd asked us about, you know, coaching in a rural school district. And so for you, you've done kind of both, you know, at Buckeye Valley and then, you know, going to Scioto. What'd you see as being the big difference, I guess, you know, because that's something that I've often wondered. Not really, I guess, desired because I just love small school, myself. And I think that's where my calling was, but I've always wondered like, what is there a big difference? You know, what did you see in your experience?
A lot of times the players were, you know, very similar. It was just that, you know, the thing that stands out in my head is, that the parents kind of let you know where they stood when I was at Buckeye Valley. You know, if they liked you, they liked you. If they didn't like you, they had no problem telling you that. And the administration, the athletic director, was up front and gave me evaluations and told me, hey, you know, we like what you're doing here. We don't like it. And so that meant a ton to me because you knew where you stood. And you know, as far as small school to big school, you know, it's all the same. It's baseball. And you guys know from when you guys take and go out and try to play the bigger schools and you compete with them. So it's really not a whole lot different. You know, you got a lot more players to choose from, but because you get a lot more involved. But I was fortunate when I was at Buckeye Valley. There were years when I had 70, 75 guys coming out for baseball. And I can remember being a football coach and at halftime, the head coach yelling at the football players about baseball. And I was like one of the assistants and I'd be like, oh my God, you know, but yeah, I mean, I really, really enjoyed my opportunity I got at Buckeye Valley because I grew up in a rural, I wouldn't say it's rural, it's just, you know, Eastern Ohio. So there were no big towns around anywhere where I was. Randy.
When you coached in MOAC, was there a particular team or a coach that, you know, you always were fired up for every game, but it was a little bit more personal for you that, you know, on that day, you know, when you woke up, you were thinking about that game and you know, because of that school or whatever.
I'll be honest with you, I felt like that every game, but you know, just because, you know, you guys were in that red division, I knew when I was playing you guys, you know, it wasn't going to be easy. And, you know, so I did everything I possibly could think to get us prepared for those types of games. And I'll share a story here. I think you may have been coaching at the time at Highland. You guys were way better than us, but I think we ended up having to play back-to-back at the end of the season, and we had to win both games to either get a share or win the league. And somehow we won the first one, and we had to play again the next day. And I was like, what can I do? Because we probably shouldn't have won the night before. And I, you know, coaches talk about having these great speeches. And I got the guys around and I said, guys, this one's on me. I said, I'll do whatever you guys want. You guys go out and get a W tonight. And, you know, one, I can't even remember the player, but he says, coach, I'll go find the biggest night crawler worm that I can find, and you got to eat it if we win. I said, deal. And we ended up winning. And I was like, we had no business winning. I think they just wanted to see me do that. And I got to say, it was the grossest thing I've ever done. I could have never made it on one of those shows. I was willing to do anything to win. That was my mentality. And,
yeah,
you know, and that kind of leads into my rapid fire question that I want to jump on right now. We'll finish up with these and then we'll let you guys go. And name two players that you coached during your years as coaching that you wish you could have on your team every season that you coached. Randy.
And, you know, I'm slight somebody because I was lucky. I had some great kids, but Nick Bailey, you know, he ended up with the River Valley career hits leader. But he was the best competitor I've ever coached. I mean, the kid would chew your leg off to win. Probably another one would have been Danny Taylor. Danny finished as the career wins leader at River Valley. And that kid, you know, when he took the mound, you know, you knew he was going to give you seven innings, you know, night in and night out, and you were going to get his best, you know, each time. You know, and like I said, that leaves out a lot of other good kids, but those two come to mind.
Okay, those are two good ones. How about you, Travis?
Yeah, same with Randy. I'm going to leave a lot of dudes out of this that I've been blessed to coach. But two for me is Gar Keen and Danny Hughes. And the cool thing is both of them got to play together. And, you know, I had an opportunity to coach both of them at the same time on the field. And, man, you know, Danny in 06 threw 110 innings. And if we had more games to play, he would have pitched more. So
how about you, Buck?
Like we said, I mean, there's a lot of these. I think I would choose Zach Wiseman as one because his pitching ability, number one, but number two, he's hands down the best fielder, shortstop, anywhere you put him in infield that I've had to this day. He just did it all. Sean Lord, probably the other one. He was a kid who he came up. He was a played freshman. He played shortstop for me as a freshman. Then he hurt his rotator cuff and ended up playing second base his last 3 years, just shot putting the ball over. But he was still one of the slickest fielders and leadoff guys, you know, I've ever had. Leaving a lot of guys out of there, man. I just going through those lists. I mean, in the spring when I compiled the school records and stuff and see, you know, these kids. I mean, I got a couple of seniors this year that have been starting since freshmen that are absolute studs. And after they graduate, they might be on that list because they've had phenomenal careers, you know?
I had a ton of guys. I was going through a list when I was writing that question down. And you know, like you guys, I hate leaving somebody off, but the two that jump out to me,
wow,
probably be Ty Harriott and Ryan Heath. And, you know, they both went on to play Division I baseball. And Ryan Heath did something that I don't think has ever been done in the history of baseball. I believe he hit three grand slams and a solo shot and a doubleheader in college at the Division I level. And what's funny is I try to get the Columbus Dispatch to put a little blurb in there about that, and they kind of just blew me off. So I reached out to Sports Illustrated, and they put him in that. They did a little article like Faces in the Crowd about it, and he got to throw out a pitch for the Detroit Tigers. So it was that was impressive. But he had played with basically like a broken thumb his senior year, and he was a stud. And Ty Harry just hit monster home runs. I mean, he was ridiculous. But I always like to put this question out there. You're coaching a Major League Baseball team, and you could have these three players on your team. Pick Group A or Group B. Randy, your choices are you got one team with Babe Ruth, Ted Williams, and Randy Johnson, or you have the other team, Hank Aaron, Mickey Mantle, and Roger Clemens. What group would you rather have on your team?
I think I would go with the Babe Ruth team with Randy Johnson on the mound. You know, prime Randy Johnson. You know, without a doubt, one of the best intimidators, you know, ever on the mound. You know, Babe Ruth was, you know, more than just a home run hitter. Who was the other guy that you said? Ted Williams. I mean, you're talking about, you know, probably the smartest hitter. You know, I read a thing once where, you know, his eyesight was so good, you know, that he lit, like, you know, he was a combat pilot in both World War II and Korea. And he was a really good, you know, combat pilot because his vision was so good. And it was something crazy, like 20/10 in one eye and 20/15 in another eye. And he claimed that he could actually see the stitches of the ball, you know, and, you know, you look at some of his numbers and they're insane, you know, with what he was able to do as a player. And you think if he hadn't lost all that time to his service in the war, I mean, he lost several seasons to that. You know, what could he be accomplished, you know, with that? So.
Well, Travis, I'll read them off again for you. Babe Ruth, Ted Williams, Randy Johnson, or Hank Aaron, Mickey Mantle, and Roger Clemens.
Well, I was going with Hank Aaron and his group there. And then Randy throws out all of this research that he did on the guys. And I'm probably going to have to go with Babe Ruth now. And Ted Williams and Randy Johnson. I did see something neat on Hank Aaron just a couple of days ago, was that if you took his 755 home runs away, he still hit still had over 3,000 hits, which is just incredible.
Yeah, it is.
All right, Buck, what group are you taking?
I'm going with that first group. I just thought it was more diverse with the you got a little power, you got a little average, you got an absolute beast on the mound. I mean, the other group's not bad by any means, but I just lean a little bit towards that first group with what they bring to the table.
Okay. And a final question, and this covers any sport. What's the toughest coaching job in America? Randy, you go first.
The toughest coaching job in America? I would almost think it has to be like right now. It almost has to be like at a powerhouse Division I college football team, you know, because, you know, well, use Ohio State. Ryan Day's lost what, 6 games in his career, and people wanted him fired last year because he lost to Michigan 2 years in a row. I mean, you know how many schools in America would kill to have a coach that had that record that he had, you know? And you hear that all the time. I mean, whether, you know, Dabo Sweeney, you know, he used to be the wonder god. Now people, oh, he's lost it. Get rid of him, you know. And those college football coaches make a lot of money, but boy, the pressure cooker is always there. And now with the transfer portal and everything, I wouldn't want that. I wouldn't want that job, you know, because it's just crazy, you know, how things go with it.
You know, what's crazy about that, you said transfer portal. I saw a thing on Instagram and the University of Utah's football team gave, through their NIL collective, gave every scholarship player a brand new Dodge Ram truck.
Wow.
And I was like, that's not for star players like they're doing here in Columbus. Yeah. It's the whole entire team. Yeah. I was like, wow, that's Well, let's go through, Travis. Toughest coaching job in America, regardless of the sport.
I think for me, probably maybe NFL head coaches. And I think it's just when you look at the turnover rate and these owners who think that, you know, having a new coach every 2 years is the quick fix. And if it doesn't happen in year one, then, you know, they're giving them an axe pretty quick or mid season or so, you know, I think that would be pretty difficult to live through.
I think I would say just because of the big market and the amount of money they throw on anything in New York, I think is tough because they're expecting immediate success. There's no time to build there for the Yankees, for the Mets, for the Knicks, Jets, you know, Giants, you name it. They want immediate success like a lot of people do, but it's just magnified in that big city market, places like that.
It's taken us a couple weeks to pull this off. And, you know, I never really got to say this to you as a coach coaching against you, but you know, I look back on it now, and it, for me as a coach and as a person, it was just such a great thing for me to be able to get a chance to coach against you guys and to be able to talk to you guys and for you to take the time out of your day to join me here on this podcast. And you guys are great examples of what the state of Ohio puts out across the state when it comes to great coaches. And, you know, I totally respect everything you've done and the careers you've had. And thank you so much for taking the time to join me here on the podcast.
Well, I really appreciate you having us, and, you know, it means a lot to this day. You know, I run and see Travis, or I see you, Ken, or I see Buck, you know, and I don't know. It's great. You know, it's like seeing an old, you know, college friend, you know, something like that, you know, and cause we shared a lot of stuff, you know, and so it's really been great to be on this, and I really appreciate you asking us to be on here. And it's so good to see all of you guys too, because you guys mean a lot to me.
Yeah. Thanks, Ken. I sure appreciate you having us on, and, you know, always great seeing all of you. And like Randy said, I mean, it's neat, you know, that you got a true friendship when you haven't seen each other or talked to each other in a while, but you run into each other and it's like you've seen each other yesterday. And, you know, that's a true sign of friendship and something that coaching fraternity brings to the table. And, you know, we just greatly appreciate all of you and the friendships and the competition and memories throughout the years.
All right, guys, take care. And thanks for being on the Athlete One podcast. It's Travis Church, Randy Leach, and Buck Workman. If you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to hit the subscribe button, rate the show, and leave us a review. It helps us to grow the show. Also, don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Athlete One Podcast. And thanks to our sponsor, the Netting Professionals, improving programs one facility at a time. Contact them today at 844-620-2707
or visit them online at www.nettingpros.com. And as always, thanks for listening to the Athlete One podcast.